Jai Ma. So we now enter into the 10th canto, which is the main for which everybody waits. The story, it's the story of Shri Krishna, his advent and his exploits as part of the Bhagavad Puran, because it's narrated in different places. So the stories of Shri Krishna are narrated mainly in three places. One is Mahabharata. The second is Bhagavad Puran, third is Harivansh, but otherwise several places, but these are the three main sources. So, before we enter into it, just a word about avatar, because here we find the full avatars. Shri Krishna is considered to be the full avatar because he has all the 16 limbs of the divine, which are described in the Upanishads, described in the Vedas, the 16 limbs or 16 aspects of the divine. He embodies within himself. So, avatar, because people often ask that, well, Supreme is there, what is the use of avatar? Sometimes people ask this question. We can directly connect with the Supreme. Well, that is true. But the difference is like the thirsty person searching for the far-off ocean in the desert land to drink water. And we know what happens when you drink ocean water. So, and the ocean flowing through the river coming right at your doorstep. This is the difference. People can make a choice. They can go and find ultimately by one's own inner means the divine consciousness. Certainly one can. It requires a tremendous tapasya. But because the divine knows, it is extremely difficult, especially for the humanity burdened with all kinds of issues which arise out of evolution. Therefore, it is the divine coming to meet man. I suppose that's what is the symbol of the Jagannath Rath Yatra. It is the divine coming out amidst all the ordinary humanity, thousands and thousands and lakhs of people waiting for him, taking him along, and then he goes back. That's the chariot of Jagannath. So, same thing, that the divine coming to human and our world, assuming a human form, a human face, becomes so much more relatable. So, basically, the purpose of the divine advent, the avatar, is to make it easier for us. But human ego is too strong. It says, no, I'll do it myself. There's no embargo, no bar. Anybody can do whatever they feel like, but they should know the difference. That's what sometimes people, even Buddha, who spoke of the Nihil, speaks about Buddham Sharnam Gacchami, which they, of course, interpret in various ways, that Buddham is Buddhi. But that's the purpose of the avatar, to make the path easier. The second is that when does the avatar come? Because the divine always sends some of his representatives as gurus, as various helpers, guides who carry the evolutionary process. But there are moments of intense crisis when the divine himself descends. So what are these moments of intense crisis? Because in the course of evolution, basically what is evolution? It's mud evolving into the sky, to put it very metaphorically. So there is the seed which is hidden inside this mud or clay or matter of earth nature, which is slowly growing. Now, in the process of growth, sometimes the mud becomes too heavy. The nature which is it's dragging along, the inconscient, the load becomes too heavy to pull. And that's the time, as the story goes, which is also described in the Bhagavad Puran, earth goes as cow. She goes as cow and prays to Lord Brahma, who is the creator, that help me redeem myself. So Brahmaji, Vishnuji and Shivji, they go to Narayana and they pray that, please help us. And he assures them that he'll come as the avatar. Now, very interestingly, as an aside, in Sri Aurobindo's one of the poems on Rakshasa, where he describes something very similar, that all the rishis, they pray to Krishna. He is describing about Ravana and Rama's coming. So they all pray to Krishna that please help us, because how long will this fellow rule? So he says, well, it has taken an aeon for Ravana to evolve out of the animal. And another aeon he must rule. That means he must take all the elements of earth, integrate. with the asuric, rakshasic type of humanity. And then I will come back and redeem earth. So there is a process. It's not a hasty provider and the divine come all the time. It's like saying no evolution. It's like a child has to go through certain challenges of life. That's what we are discussing in the Trojan War also. The gods withdraw. And it's very true. In Kali Yuga, after all the three ages, the divine withdraws. He lets humanity, like, okay, you do it. Try to do it. And naturally, after a point, things begin to collapse because we are, after all, without knowing the truth, we are trying to build because we have an aspiration. And so the same process takes place, that in every age, humanity is allowed a certain kind of freedom. It is assisted by the saints, the sages, and seers in the process as different guides who will help humanity to build things. And of course, the gods. But it reaches a point where this process becomes very, very difficult, because the burden of earth nature, the inconscient lies behind. In the process of journey, human beings carry a lot of, you're growing out of the dust, you're playing with dust, you carry a lot of dust yourself. So there is the need of a divine advent. And how does the advent takes place? It is the earth, Mother Earth, which goes, and she goes in the form of a cow. Now, as we know, the cow is used as an earlier symbol also, at least twice in the Bhagavad Puran itself. This is the third time cow is used. And why cow is used as a symbol? First, she is praying at the beginning. She is standing on one foot. That is faith. Everything else is gone. And she is praying for God to help. Then another place, King Prithu. So that's very interesting symbol story. We have spoken about it passingly, that King Prithu, after which the name Prithvi is kept. So Prithu is literally said, he milks the earth as cow. So we must understand cow is a potent symbol, because everything of cow is used. That's why cow is not just about sacredness. It's about, as a symbol, it's one creature of which everything is used. And used right from birth to a child, you know. So that's something very beautiful about the cow. Even the cow dung is used, or was used at one point. Even now, you know, you can make a gas plant out of it. So that's why she is considered. It's a way of reminding all of us that, look here, somebody who gives so much to us, we should be respectful and honor that. So this is how the cow goes. And Brahmaji says, it's beyond me, we'll go. And they all pray to Lord Narayan, and he says, okay, the time has come for me to take birth. But what does he do? He doesn't come straight away. See, before the king comes, the ministers must go. And this is something which Sri Aurobindo also confirms, that when the divine comes, there are several beings who come around that time. If you look at Sri Aurobindo's own life, you will see it. But since right now we are with Shri Krishna. So what happens? Lot of the gods, they start taking birth in human forms, because now they have to assist the process. So all these gods enter into Yadukul, different places, even Hastinapur, all these gods come. But knowing that the time has come when the burden, earth will be unburdened, even the asuras start taking birth. So if you look at that time, some of these great kings, great kings means very powerful kings, especially Kans, Jarasandh, Shishupal. They were the three really mighty kings. And all of them, and in many of the clans within Kansa's family and other families, we'll see that time many Asuric kings who are just dominating for ambition, who are extracting money from the taxes, let's put it like that, from all the different tribes which are below them. I mean, those who do the upbringing of Shri Krishna, Brij Bhumi, they also have to pay taxes, because taxes that time meant milk, okay, you give 80% of the yield. That was the degree of taxation. We cannot even imagine. 80% of all of that has to go to Kansa. So this were the tyrant kings, and deep behind there is a play of forces which decides ultimately the divine advent. So first all these people come who are different gods, as we know during the time of Mahabharata, Arjun, Bhim, Yudhishthir, and some people even in the in the clan of Shri Krishna are born, who are gods in human form to assist in the labor. Meanwhile, when things are ready, so the story is very dramatic. Now, coming to Shri Krishna's advent, that Kansa's cousin sister. Now, Kansa is a very interesting family. So, they belong to the Vrishni clan. They are different clans. Very fascinating study. Yadu clan. Then these are the Vrishnis. So, Vrishni clan, Kansa's cousin sister is Devaki. So, Devaki gets married to Vasudev. Not Vasudev, but Vasudev. Vasudev is the same English spelling, but he is the deity who is within the whole creation. And Vasudev is the name of her husband. So as he is driving the chariot, he is the cousin brother. He says, okay, wonderful. So as he is driving the chariot, there is a Akashvani. There is a voice he hears. And he hears the voice. Now people often say, what does it mean, Akashvani? They show very dramatically, everybody is hearing. No. It's like a flash which comes to the man. And if I have to put it very scientifically, Kans has a flash. Maybe as a thought that, you know, this, your sister's eighth son is going to kill you. It's very interesting. Eighth son itself is very symbolic, but most important is, because we'll see it even in the Rig Veda, the story, but I'll not get into all the details. But he has a flash that my sister's son is going to kill me. Why does he feel that? Very simple reason, that he is burdened himself with so much what we call a sin, that he is as if waiting. Now you see, people who develop a lot of feeling that God is about to harm us, God is about to harm us. This is the mindset. So if you probe, you say, what are you guilty about? They'll come up with some guilt, real or unreal. Not that there is any, in God's vision there is a sin. But the person is burdened by sin. Because he was doing things which were not the right thing. So somewhere he is waiting how to get redeemed. So there is a whole complex internal psychology going on in this man. Because after all, he is one of those who has fallen once. So somewhere it's burdening him, and one day he get this intuition. Let me put Akashvani as an intuition. That's what it means. That this, your sister whom you are driving, no, after marriage, her eighth son is going to kill you. He says, okay. So he wants to kill her. He says, I'll not let the eighth son come. So he is going into this cruel mode. And as he is about to kill her, her husband Vasudev pleads with him, says, why are you doing this? You know, anyway, it's not immediate. Whatever it is, I will bring every child of mine to you. Eighth son, you feel endangered by the eighth son, I'll bring the child. So don't worry about it. So after all, brother, he says, okay, fine. So he tells them to be in a palace. Now they are in a palace, but they can't just go out. They are under some kind of a house arrest. And Kans is enjoying life, and then suddenly they have a child. Who has a child? Devaki and Vasudev. The first child. So Vasudev has faith that if this is the prophecy, as he says, this will fulfill itself. Doesn't matter what. So he quietly takes the first child and gives it to Kans. Now Kans is very happy. He says, they are very nice. And then for a moment he says, it's okay, leave it. You keep the child. I have a danger from the eighth child. I'll wait. Now this is a problem. Now there is a twist in the tale. Very interesting twist. Narad comes. He says, are you sure you have done the right thing? He says, yes. He says, well, I don't know whether it's truly the right thing to do. Eighth son, I don't know if you keep living like this. He just sows a little seed and goes away. Then he calls all his people. They come together in the assembly. And they tell him, Kans, I think don't trust all these voices, that eighth son. You might as well kill all of them. Who knows which is the eighth? He may just smuggle a child. So he's finally filled with all this thought of suspicion. And he is all the time after that thinking about Krishna. And Krishna means, he doesn't know Krishna, but the eighth son who is going to come. Who is this eighth son? Who is this eighth son? And meanwhile, he says, okay, let's kill everyone. Why this is there in the story? It's very fascinating. In one place, the mother describes, and then we'll understand many things, even today, that are happening. She says the fastest way to finish an asura is to let him do what he wants. He will collapse under its own weight. See, there is some goodness in Kan still left. Okay, it's okay, it's a child, I don't know. Now when he hears the counsel of his ministers, he says, I am going to kill all of them. Now they say, but why is God getting them slaughtered? Well, for the divine, there is nothing like slaughter, killing. This is our human conception. They go back. They are all, like we see Ganga putting all her children into water. So from the divine point of view, they go, they come back. But to Kansa, the burden of his errors is now mounting. And that we see again in the story of Shishupal, where Shri Krishna tells him, I'll pardon your 100 sins. And as he starts abusing, everybody is waiting, everybody wants to draw their sword, but Shri Krishna says, hold on. 100 first, and he beheads him. Now, because there is a point at which the cosmic forces and the divine, there is a recoil which takes place. So in the story, Narad and then later on all the council of ministers, they become the catalyst to make him end up finishing his quota of forgiveness, let's put it like that. So he kills one, he kills second, he kills third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Now, the seventh child has to come. And then the eighth. So he's become very vigilant, very, very cautious. But what is happening now? This is another very interesting turn in the story. He's only thinking of Krishna. Krishna, I mean, who is this eighth child? Who is this eighth child? In the yogic parlance, you see, it's a Bhagavad Puran is a very profound yogic and occult scripture. When you think about God by any means, this story I have discussed earlier, so we'll put it. When you are all the time thinking of the divine, even with animosity, you are actually indulging, engaging in a kind of yoga which is called as Vairabhav. So that's why people at one place, even Mother says, people who deny the divine, who forcibly, you know, they still are okay. But the biggest problem is with those who are inert, they don't care. Completely indifferent. Because when you deny the divine aggressively, actively, what are you doing? You are constantly taking the name of the divine inwardly. So Kans enters that mode where he is all the time thinking, he's afraid, and he's thinking whether he'll come from this side, that side. And now the seventh child is waiting. Okay, seventh child, I'll do whatever I have to do. Now that is the time magic takes place. Now this is very interesting. We'll come to all the three murtis in Rath Yatra. So first, who comes? Now all the different gods have come. Now Balaram comes. Now why Balaram? We'll talk about this very beautiful symbol. So Balaram comes. So when Balaram comes, he is born. He's a baby who is born. I'll kill him. But Balaram is important. So Balaram is, there is Yoga Maya, which is the power of the divine. She does a womb transfer. So Balaram is transferred into the womb of Rohini. Rohini, who is Rohini? Rohini is one of the 7-8 wives of Vasudev. Vasudev is not only one wife. With Devaki is put into prison, but otherwise one of his wives, Rohini, the baby is transferred there, and as the story goes, Rohini has visited him in jail, so it's all like falls into social norms. So now she is carrying Balaram. So what happens here? Here there is an abortion. So there is an abortion here. Now Kans gets very confused. Now was it the seventh child technically or not? So now what has happened? Now he is more and more growing full of Krishna. Because now he is thinking, was it seventh? Was it not seventh? He goes into calculation. Should we count an aborted child now? Then Balaram meanwhile is born to Rohini. And she's taken that she is Vasudev's son. Because she used to go to the jail and they must have met. And so he is born. And then the eighth child, Yogmaya herself, enters the womb. So Yogmaya, we'll talk about who is Yogmaya. So Yogmaya is the power of Krishna himself. And then we'll see the symbol of the Rath Yatra very beautifully. So then Yogmaya comes and She is born. Now Kansa is totally confused. It was supposed to be an eighth son. Seventh is abortion. That is bad enough. I am confused. Now eighth is a daughter. Where is the son? So now here what was done was, another thing takes place, that well, this is a way to deceive, because she is the power of the divine illusion, cosmic illusion. So this, while she is born, the Lord is there watching over the whole thing. And because Krishna is in the womb, actually he has started entering the womb, taking hold of Vasudev and Devaki. There is a luminescence and, you know, everything is glowing. So they are wondering, this must be the eighth one, this must be the eighth one. And Lord Vishnu comes and gives them darshan also. But last minute, there is a change. Yog Maya, Krishna is not seen and she is born, as if she is the baby who is born. Now when Kansa comes, he is very angry, very confused, and he picks up Yog Maya, a child, daughter, and dashes her. Tries to dash her. See, now if you see in the hierarchy of sins, if I may use the word in a qualified sense, we'll talk about sins some other time. This is worst. This is the daughter. She is Shakti. And as he tries to throw her, as the story goes, she slips from her hands and she manifests as Durga, as Yog Maya. And he says, boy, your end has come. He is somewhere else. Now, what is that somewhere else? Because Krishna's, as we know, that when she has to deliver the baby, everybody sleeps. This is just before the birth. This is where the cosmic illusion works. Just before her birth, all the people are keeping watch that there will be a baby, Krishna will be born, and we'll inform Kans. But magically, all of them go to sleep that particular night. And as Shobindu says in Savitri, jail delivery of the imprisoned soul. The story of Krishna is the story of psychic being, but the child Krishna. You will see Shri Krishna in three phases. First phase is when he is born and Bal Leela, and the second phase is when he is in, you know, the Dwarkadhish and the Mahabharata, by which his mission gets over. So these are the three main phases. So Shri Krishna manifests as Chaturbhuj Roop, then he takes birth, all of them are asleep. The gates magically open. And Vasudev goes, and he, Rohini has, just then Yashodama has delivered a girl, and that girl is none else but Yog Maya, but she is too exhausted and she has gone off to sleep. So she doesn't even know whether it's a boy or a girl. So he goes, keeps the baby there, picks up as directed by the voice, and he takes the girl and brings back and puts by the side of Devaki. Then everybody magically awakens and sees this is a girl, and then what I've just described follows. Kans comes, tries to dash her, and she says, look here, man, you're lost. He is born already. Where is he born? She laughs and vanishes. This is Yog Maya. This is a power of cosmic illusion. But here you see, this is an illusion which works so beautifully. People think that they are the doers, but she is dictating her own terms. She is arranging the whole stage. And why she is doing? She is actually hastening the asura to his own fall. And mother describes this so beautifully. She says it's like when you have to finish a balloon. You blow more and more air, more and more air, more and more air, till once we all have played that game, it gets punctured. So asura goes to that point where he thinks, I am the Lord. The day he thinks, I am the Lord, he will try to. Lord is infinite. There is no limit to him. And he tries, and very rapidly he hastens. Why did the divine allow him? Because of the evolutionary stages. This is what we have just discussed, that you know, you can't straight away imagine a very primitive humanity growing into sages and saints. So there will be, in the evolutionary process, the asura and the rakshasa who will come, govern the earth. Then eventually out of them the gods will emerge. This is the process. Or first the human beings, then gods will emerge. So now when she goes away, meanwhile Krishna is born here. Now Kansa goes crazy. So just like we know King, same story which is there in the Bible, King Herod, if I'm not mistaken, who is Nero, who's told that, well, kill all the babies in the last 10 days. So he says, okay, shall I kill all the baby? But now he is getting frightened. So he says, if I kill all the babies, now he is also worried that my burden of sin has become too high. Now if I kill all the babies, so he tells all his fellows, asuras, friends, all of them whose name we'll see, that we'll do later on, that you go and find which are the babies born around this time and you kill them, especially during this time. And that story will come later on during the Bal Leela. But it's very symbolic. We'll come to that a little later. Meanwhile, now, once Krishna is born there in Gokul, now everybody is enjoying. So Krishna and Balaram become brothers. Balaram from the same father, but apparently different mothers. Apparently only. So we have Balaram, we have Shri Krishna. What about Yogmaya? She has done the trick. She says, now I'll also enter the play. And she has a very significant role. So how does she come? She enters, she is born again to Rohini when Vasudev gets free and he comes here later on. Now there are traditions which say instantly, but if you go into the different works, well, after all this, Vasudev, when he comes back, he has a baby girl through Rohini again and she is Subhadra. So Subhadra is none else but Yogmaya. What does she do in this whole story of Mahabharata? She plays a very important role because she is the one whose child ultimately, whose rather I would say grandchild ultimately becomes the scion of Bharatvarsh. So Subhadra, Shri Krishna plans her running away with Arjun. They fall in love, they run away. So this way what he does, you'll see Shri Krishna is a great strategist. So what he does with this one act, Subhadra is almost like, you know, you'll see parallels in Odysseus. Helen of Troy runs away with Paris. Here, Shri Krishna makes her, Subhadra, actually encourages, make sure they meet, make sure they fall in love, and then make sure that they escape. So what does this escape serve? This escape created a big problem in the alliance. So in the Mahabharata war, now people who have to join together get divided. Because Subhadra was from the Yadavas. She was going to get married to Shishupal. Now, if they came together, now here we see what a strategist Shri Krishna is. If they got together, Shishupal is Chedi kingdom. So these are the three powerful people, Jarasandh and Kansa are cousins. Cousins, he is uncle, but same family, and Shishupal. Now, if all three kingdom came and forged an alliance with the Yadavas, who will stand chances? So very beautifully, Shri Krishna makes sure that now Subhadra comes with Arjun. Now this creates a big dilemma for Balaram. In the actual war, Balaram has sympathies for Duryodhan, but he doesn't join. And one of the reasons why he doesn't, this is just to understand Shri Krishna is a master strategist. He has foreseen all this. So had he joined the war, the balance would have been tilted. Very difficult, you know, then imagine Shri Krishna and Sheshnag fighting each other, Narayana. So he makes sure that Balaram doesn't join. He is also known as Balbhadri in Odisha. So this is the background of the story. Then Krishna's exploits and Balaram as he grows up and Subhadra's on her own. So in the Rath Yatra, we'll see there is Shri Krishna, there is Balbhadra or Balaram. So in Odisha, they call him Balbhadra. And there is Subhadra in the center. Both the brothers are guarding that sister. So now when you look at this image, does it not remind us at one level, in a different way, of Rama, Sita and Lakshman? Rama is the divine soul, Narayana, Vishnu as the avatar. Lakshman is Seshnag as the avatar. in between, who is Sita? Actually, it's very difficult to understand who is Sita in the Ramayana. But one thing we know, that she is the divine power. Many traditions don't regard her as necessarily the Vigraha of Lakshmi, though we all by and large believe that. And she is born to earth. So she becomes the daughter of earth. That's how Sita, Janak's wife, so Janaki, all this comes. So there is Sri Krishna who has come from above. And there is Balaram. Now time to talk a little bit about Balaram. Who is Balaram? So Balaram is Shesh Avatar. Now, who is Sheshnag? At one level, if you see Sheshnag, that famous image we all know. So Sheshnag is the Sankarshan. He is known as Sankarshan. Sankarshan is the power that holds all the things together. If you have to relate it to modern physics, you will say it is the origin of the gravitational force, something which is mind-boggling even to physicists. Why should mass itself create the power of drawing things to itself? It's actually a problem of physics, but I'll not go into this. Very fascinating. Now that's because Sankarshan holds all these things together. So where is Sankarshan? Sankarshan is in the darkest inconscience, Patal. And he's described in Bhagavad Puran that, there is a vision of Sankarshan. He is right down below in the darkness. He is completely tamogun. And unless he allows, nobody can release. Nobody can get release. So he is that powerful and mighty. Who is Krishna? Krishna, Akarshan. He is the upward pulling magnet. So the whole thing is taking place between Sankarshan and Krishna. Or Akarshan, if you want to put it. And they are pulling. And who is in between? Yogamaya. What is Yogamaya doing? She is constantly unraveling. This is her work. The great mysteries of the divine step by step. This story in the Rig Veda is explained in a different way. About the story of Brahmajaya, the bride of Brahman going away. So bride, sister, these are ways of putting that story. But basically it is, she is Yogamaya, actually Subhadra. So as the power of the Lord, she stands now between whom? Sri Krishna, who is that highest pole of existence. And right down below, there is Sheshnag, Balabhadra. And between them is Yogamaya. She is the one who is coordinating the whole thing between them. She is the one who is connecting them, joining them together. And all the various things that will take place in evolution will be a result of that. That's why one of the images that is so famous and worshipped in Indian household is, again, one is this image, the other is Rama, the divine soul, Lakshman, the Sheshnag, and in between there is Janaki or Sita, the Mother Earth, power of the divine inside earth, and it is evolving. So this contains a deep mystic symbol. If I get into it, it will be a big subject, but just to come back now to the story. So Sankarshan has gone deep inside Patal, and from there he is coming out. That's why in the Sheshnag head you will see earth. It's not only earth. In the traditional image you will see only earth. But actually all the planetary systems, all the galaxies, everything is supported by Sankarshan. What are they saying? They are saying there is a strong pull of gravitation. After all, he is one with the Lord and he has gone inside. In fact, if you see the first avatar of the Lord, who is described in the Puranas, I was very surprised when I read it because I remembered something, but we'll come to that. First avatar is not Matsavatar. Matsavatar is on earth. But avatar in the sense of the descent of the divine into the inconscient. The Vedas speak about the Shakti which goes into the inconscient then emerges. But the first avatar of the Lord is Sankarshan. You read, you'll see his identity with Lord Vishnu. He has gone. So where has he gone? Into the Patal. He is holding the worlds together. And it is he who releases the energy which is required for the evolutionary process. Now, when I had read this, I remembered Mother's first vision of the first avatar. Many people, because they may not be aware that why has Mother written like that, mother's vision, which she describes as the first avatar, it is also there in descriptions of Savitri, book 1, canto 1, you'll find it, and it's a vision, one of the visions she had, which are, I don't think they are in collected works, maybe part of that, I don't know, 6 visions of the mother. So one of them was that she goes down, down, down into the inconscient. What does she see? She sees an iridescent being who is lying down. And there is the great serpent. And the iridescent being is there. And when she goes there, he opens the eyes. That's how the whole thing comes. So when he opens the eyes, what does it mean? It means now that there is a new mode of creation which has to come. This is actually a description of the mother. And then she says, this is the first avatar. And then Savitri will make sense. The first canto is about the first avatar. He himself has entered into the inconscient. From there he is emerging. So then what is this first avatar? Is Matsya avatar, the parable of 10 avatar. That is, the scene is earth. So on earth they are the series of avatars. But if you speak of the first time the divine plunges. Why does he do it? Very simple logic. If you have to, supposing, start a creation. So you must fix both the ends. They must be tied very firmly, strongly. On the one end, there is Sri Krishna. On the other end, there is Balaram holding. Or in Vaishnava tradition, you have these 4 as the main deity. Just like in the Vedas, we have the 4 main deities as, below, working below Indra, Varun, Mitra, Bhag and Som. So here the deities are Shri Krishna, Balaram, Pradyumna and Anirudha. You'll see these 4 deities. They are described. And Shobindu confirms it. Nalinda has written an article on it. That yes, in the Vaishnava tradition, these are the 4 original powers. So between them, they are holding the creation. What is the play they are doing? Well, if there is nothing here, that gravitational pull we all experience in life, Sri Aurobindo describes this whole process in... See how Sri Aurobindo describes this magic in a small poem called A Tree. A tree beside the sandy river beach, holding its topmost boughs to the skies, like fingers to the heaven they cannot reach. This is the soul of man, his body and brain, hungry for earth, his heavenly flight detain. So why this process? Both the ends, divine is holding. Because otherwise there will be nothing which will stay with Krishna right there. Will creation ever stay like this? Within moments he'll rush back. And mother explains this same process very beautifully in Collected Works, volume 10. She says that there is a reason that divine love, we often say divine love should, divine should do magic. Yes, he can do magic. He says, but creation is not ready, it will go to blazes. So what is Balaram doing? He is ploughing the field. Look now the symbol. He is the ploughs man. So what is he doing? He is ploughing the field. Why is ploughing the field? When he has ploughed the field and is ready for the seeds, new seeds to come up, then Sri Krishna will come and he'll play flute. And the new creation will come up. So these are beautiful symbols which are there. So first Balaram comes. He comes to prepare. But as the story goes, there is a very beautiful little small aside story that Lakshman is toward the end of Ram avatar. He says, this is not fair. All my life I have obeyed you only. But I am the one who has plunged into the darkness first. He says, yes. He says, so? He says, next avatar I'll compensate for it. You be the elder one. So he says, okay. He'll say, then I'll have a say. He'll say, you'll have the first say. But as the story goes, he has the first say. But Krishna still has the last say. He keeps telling him, don't do this, don't do this. He says, okay, you have had your say. He allows him. In Ram avatar, Lakshman has no say. He is totally obedient. He says, you tell me. Once he, of course, tried to say his Seshnag and says, don't listen to the old king. He has gone mad. But Rama prevails. But here he has the last say. Now when we look at this story from that angle, even the Rath Yatra, so These are the two poles of existence, two powers which uphold this creation. And in between is Yog Maya, who is generating all this creation, is her. So there is a double dance which is going on. And that is also described in the Bhagavad Puran. On one side is Krishna. Krishna's dance we are waiting for fully manifesting. But on the other side, if you see the description of Shesh, Nag, or as he is described as Sankarshan, is the same. Balaram is Lord Sankarshan in the depths of the darkness. He is dancing and it is so magical. Nobody wants to leave looking at his dance. It's described. He's dancing majestically. So this is the, between the two of them, the whole creation is being taken up. So people often ask, then what about the Trinity? What about the creator Brahma? What about Mahesh? What about Lord Vishnu as the preserver? Not Vishnu as, but Lord Vishnu as the preserver. Because many people say, is it three or is it four? Sri Aurobindo speaks of four. There are four, quadruple. Who are the four? He speaks of infinite Brahma, infinite Vishnu, infinite Shiva, and infinite Krishna. Then he describes, Brahma is infinite creation. So he is creating. There is no limit to what he can create. Vishnu is the infinite consciousness, which is holding things together, keeping them in right relation. And Shiva is infinite power of destruction. So where is Krishna? He is all over as the infinite Ananda. Now you see why the importance is given to Sri Krishna. Because he is, even Sri Aurobindo says, he says we are here to complete what Krishna started. Because he is the Ananda. There is whole creation, the process right from step one to all the game that goes on, to destruction also. There is an Ananda in all of it. And that Ananda is Sri Krishna. So that is the whole story of Sri Krishna's advent and the earth preparing itself. It has to go through the process. It applies to everybody in our life. People often say, why this is happening? Why that is happening? Even now people ask, what is all that? I don't know, some cockroaches or whatever. Something is happening in Delhi and people are... You must understand, all this is, if you have to use a metaphysical language, Balaram, what is he doing? He is sowing the field, plowing the field. Because the soil is very hard. They are not ready. So these people have to do all this hangama, all this nonsense if you ask me. But from that higher standpoint we can say, but this required. Kansa ploughs the soil under the influence. So he ploughs it. He is doing the hard task. There is so much pain. There is so much suffering. Mother gives this solution at the end. And I have often wondered, even recently I was saying, I said, what is so strange is that human beings still don't turn toward the divine. But all this problem that matter and material life goes through is ultimately, at some point when you are faced with wall, you turn toward the divine. This is not a good way to turn. You should turn joyously to the origin. But it ultimately, at many levels, it helps creation turn to the divine. So first the divine ploughs man comes. He ploughs the soil. And when the earth is ready, then comes the next Krishna's float. So in yoga also this applies. There are people who want life to be easy, yoga to be easy, and Sri Aurobindo reminds them, there is no yoga made easy like French without tears. Balaram has to come first. Then the gods will come. Then comes the Lord. So it's the same thing we see in everyday life. First, if the king has to come, first who will come? Those have to repair the road and do all kinds of things. Then will come the ministers who will come and see. Well, then the king will come. So in yoga, same thing applies. First, the ploughs here. So our soil is very hard. We think by just aspiring, we will find God. Oh, I have joined the ashram. And people came to ashram. Nalnida would say, and it was a saying here, well-known saying. Look here, First year, don't think of sadhana, just get rooted. How do we get rooted? This again we see sankarshan. See, when you understand its meaning, sankarshan, gravity, it holds you. It will hold you. Even when you are not still ready for yoga, it just ties you there. So it holds. Just get held. That is a big training. Many people understand what I'm saying. And then slowly now the different gods will come. He will plough the field. Gods will come. Prepare us for the ultimate truth. And then once we enter into the third phase, and Shobindo describes this in the synthesis of yoga in 4 8s again. He says first part, effort, 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 possibly no result or very little result. Second part is effort and result, effort and result. Third is the sunlit path. In Tantra it is described same way as I said, Pashupati. The divine comes as Pashupati. The animal has to be beaten up. And unfortunately, sometimes very brutally, you know, because we are like animals to start with. And the divine will make sure that when we become little malleable, flexible, I'm sure everybody is able to relate, those who are into the yoga. Then a time comes when we are little more ready, little more flexible, plastic. Then the divine says, okay, next level. Then starts the process. Then slowly things develop. Gods come, different qualities, capacities, they begin to emerge. And finally, the dance of Sri Krishna. And who conducts this whole process? That is Yog Maya. That is Subhadra. So she will do it. That's where the Divine Mother. In this whole process, in Sri Krishna, she comes as Radha is sitting behind. Radha never engages into the play because the world has to be ready for that Ananda. That is still waiting. Mother and Sri Aurobindo spoke about the power of Radha, and we'll talk about it when we come to that. And the second is Draupadi. She is Kali. She came to make sure that, you know, all the remnants of the good and bad, everything of the Dwapar Age, like in Troy we saw the Bronze Age, must collapse. Why should the good collapse? That's what we see in Mahabharata War. Because even good becomes a big barrier. See, very often you will see, especially I've seen people in Uttar Pradesh, let me name because I'll I have connected to the state. They will say, why Sri Aurobindo, we have so many gods? I said, I know, that's the problem. A theist has a greater chance. Same thing we see in Sri Krishna's life. All of them say, why are you asking us to worship Govardhan? Indra is there. He said, no, don't worship Indra. Worship Govardhan. This is matter. Matter is giving you so much. You are neglecting matter, who is giving you all the yields, and you are only worshipping Indra. He says, sure, we can trust you. He says, try. And Indra gets very angry. And he tries everything, and finally we have that famous image of Sri Krishna. Many of these Bal Leela are entirely beautiful exposition of the yogic process. So Sri Krishna is born, and all over there is delight. All nature is a beauty's festival, as we see. And we have that beautiful story of Vasudev carrying him on the tokri. And as the story goes, that Yamuna is in spate. Why is Yamuna in spate? Normally it is because she is very happy. But why she is happy? So there is a story of Yamuna. If you have to connect these beautiful interconnected stories. So who is Yamuna? She is daughter, sister of Yama. Yama and Yami, not the English Yami. They are twins, the masculine and the feminine. You see, then you see that story that way, it's so interesting. So while Yama is the guardian of the law, let me not call as underworld, guardian of the law in ignorance and darkness. And when you enter into the light, then the guardian is Surya. Then you don't come under Yama. You are no more. That's how why mother says that my children don't go to death. The moment you turn toward the light, turn toward the sun, then sun takes over. Then sun decides what happens to your body. By sun is meant the supramental truth, the ultimate divine truth. That's what Yajnavalk prays for, aspires for. But till then there is Yama. But Yama is on this side, he is the god What about his Shakti is the sister. She comes into this dark world of misery and pain. Now we'll see very interesting things will get connected. So she comes here. Now, and if you, I think some people must have visited Yamuna. I have gone. I have faced the storm, seen the crocodiles and the turtles. It's terrible. Was caught in a bad storm. It's blinding. And we were some 7-8 family members. We all just, I was a child, holding together. That's the only scene I remember. Holding together, close the eyes, sit on the bank, don't do anything. And the storm passes away, then you go back. And of course, I have gone to Yamuna otherwise also. So, what does she do? She is always in spate. Why? Because she has got a difficult job here. She is the same power of death is here on the ground, also running. She is connected with Yama, but she doesn't like her job description. So she says, Yama, please come at least once a year. See, this is a big burden I am carrying to send people to you. So he says, okay, once a year I'll come to you. And that day, you are my sister. You tie to me, it's bhai phota. So you put tikka on me, and people use rakhi also sometime. So that particular day, those who do this ritual practice, I will spare them. She says, okay, come. So that's the day of joining of these two currents, a very deep mystic story. And it's like honoring Yama and Yami on our behalf, Yamuna. And now it will become very clear why Sri Krishna comes on the banks of Yamuna. And why he dances on the banks of Yamuna. Because this is the dark undercurrent. And why he plunges into the depths of Yamuna, where there is that hydra-headed serpent, which mother describes in one of her visions. In fact, two places she describes. One is in a prayer where it's not very explicit. Another is where the child dancing on the hood of the serpent. She describes this. It's the same truths seen in different ways. So he releases, because it's the poison which is in the underbelly of earth. So one of his exploits, one of his work is to make sure that the underbelly of human consciousness, subconscious, is cleared of that toxin which is coming from below. Otherwise, have you ever heard of physically a snake below, therefore the whole thing will become poisonous, you drink water, you are afraid of entering inside. It's a very clear mystic story. And then he plays the flute, and Yamuna, Shobhinda is immortalized in one of his poems, Ahana. So Yamuna, because she is a witness to the Ras. Why she is a witness to the Ras? Why not Ganga? She has waited for ages for the divine advent. When will I get release? And he promises her, look here, when earth will be ready for this Ras, you too will get release. So that's why Yamuna is happy to see Sri Krishna, because it's a promise that one day she will be released of this difficult task, the dark waters undercurrent which runs in this earth, to where all the death and all this accumulates. You'll see it's water like that. And to the tune of the flute. So all that story, Sri Krishna's whole story as a child, is very, very symbolic. One of them is, of course, the Yamuna itself, Yamuna. And so we have in the beginning, when Vasudev is carrying him on a, what is soup called in English? I don't know. What is it called? He carries him on his soup. On, well, tokri, whatever it is. So Yamuna is very happy. Why she is happy? She is happy because she has a chance now to be redeemed. Now you see why Sri Aurobindo describes in Savitri, as Narad comes, the Asuras sing in joy. They wept in joy. They are doing a difficult task. They are waiting. When will there be the divine advent? So when the moment Yamuna sees Sri Krishna, she goes in spate. She rises. And she touches Sri Krishna's feet and comes down. There are some toys devised like that. very beautiful toys as children we have played. This used to be part of the, we used to, you know, sajao all this jhulan that time when rains come. So Yamuna goes in speed because she understands it is the touch of the divine which can completely redeem me, because she is a daughter of heaven actually. She, like Yama, they are both born to the sun. But she is the dark undercurrent, the ignorance which is flowing here. And she is waiting for a redemption, and she touches the feet of Krishna, she comes back. And it's a very beautiful image, I think many of us have seen. And there is a conversation taking place, and Sri Krishna is smiling, and Vasudeva is carrying that thing on his head. And then he goes, reaches Vrindavan, Vraj Bhumi, keeps, exchanges that daughter and comes back. And when he comes back and keeps Yog Maya, all the jailers, they magically wake up. And when they wake up, they inform Kans, and Kans comes, and he tries to dash Yog Maya, and she takes the form and says, "Man, the prophecy is going to be fulfilled. Step one is already taken. Krishna is born, but not here, elsewhere." Okay, so we'll stop with this story here and continue next time. Jai Ma.